I'm not pulling out of the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work, coronavirus edition. So we have another interview for you today. Elaine Chase is here, and Elaine has done a little of everything at Wizards. So we're going to walk through all the stuff she's done. She's done lots of different things. And also, so Elaine, hello.
Hello. Hi, Mark. Hi, listeners.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the question I've been asking everybody when we start here is, how did you learn to play Magic?
Okay, so it was the summer before my senior year in college, which was 1994, and I had a job, a summer job, like most people do, and I was the lifeguard at a Holiday Inn for the indoor pool weekday shift. And the thing to know about this Holiday Inn weekday is that it was a business clientele mostly in the weekdays. So like literally I would sit there from 10 in the morning till 5 at night and like maybe one person came into the pool like once. So I sat there and stared at an empty indoor pool for like 40 hours a week. And I was bored out of my mind. So I got a copy of Games Magazine. And in this issue of Games Magazine, which was probably like the, I don't know, May, June, you know, 1994 edition, there was a review of this game called Magic the Gathering and an ad and an editorial, like an article about it. It looked really interesting. And so my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, of 20 years, we just had our anniversary very recently.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So he looked at it and we looked at it and it's like, we played a lot of games. We played a lot of card games. And I was like, hey, this looks really interesting. Like this looks kind of cool. I wonder what we should do. So I come home from work the next day. And he hands me one of those starter decks, and just hands it to me and says, open it up, pull out the rule book. And the rule book was, you know, like this 6-point font, like, you know, 100-page rule book. He's like, read this whole thing cover to cover. And don't ask me any questions because I have no idea. And then we'll try. And that's how we learned how to play Magic. Just the two of us reading out of a revised edition starter deck rule book. And we were just hooked like instantly. Like we just fell in love with it instantly.
Okay. So the first time I think we met was, in fact, this was caught on tape nonetheless, is you were in line for the first Pro Tour. And I was doing the video for it, so I was walking down the line interviewing people, and I interviewed you in line, and that actually is in the tape we made for the very first Pro Tour, and me interviewing you is for the 2 seconds, whatever, it is in that tape.
Yes, that is there. It is in that tape. It's you and me. We were much younger then.
But that's the first time I think I ever met you, I believe.
I think we might have met at maybe Origins 95. We might have met then.
Oh, it's possible.
Because that was February 96. So there's a chance that we met at Origins 95, or at least I saw you and knew who you were. It was funny, by the way. I have a funny story from that Origins. Richard was there, and he was signing things. And so we were in line to get Richard to sign some stuff.
Richard Garfield, by the way, for those that don't know who you mean.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Richard Garfield. So Richard Garfield is there. He's signing some things. And he was there, and there were, like, some artists that were signing things. And so there's, like, this kid in front of us, and, like, he had just been going to all the artists being, like, what do you draw? And, like, you know, pull that card out of his, you know, box, you know, because there weren't that many cards at that time. He was like, oh, well, this one. Okay, sign this one then. And he went up to Richard, and he goes, so what cards did you do? And Richard just looks at him and blinks and goes, all of them. And the kid's, like, scratching his head, and he starts flipping through his cards, and he, like, what, all of them? He's like, yeah, all of them. He's just flipping through his cards again. He's like, did you do the backs? He's like, no. And so finally, like, Richard's just having a ball. And I pity on this kid, and I lean forward, and I'm like, it's Richard Garfield. He designed the whole game. And the kid's like, oh. And he just reached out and shook his hand, and then, like, walked away.
Okay, so you came to the first Pro Tour.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, New York had a pretty big scene back in the day. Like, it was one of the first cities that actually had regular tournament play, you know, because if you go back into 94, that wasn't something that happened a lot across the country. And then, okay, so how did you get from playing the first Pro Tour to coming to work at Wizards? How did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, so I played a lot, and I played in two Pro Tours, including the first one, which was awesome. But my problem with playing in New York is that, as you said, it was a really hotbed for competitive Magic play. Like, so many future Hall of Famers came out of the New York area, and, you know, associate areas, like people come down from Boston, right? And, you know, people come up from, you know, Pennsylvania. So the competition was really, really hard. And I was a good player. But I'm not, you know, nowhere near Hall of Fame material or even winning a Pro Tour material. So most of my play would be like, oh, I go like 4-0 and then I play against John Finkel and lose. And then I play against Steve OMS and lose, right? Like that was my life, right? Like, just, you know, I kept hitting, like, I was in that, you know, constantly, you know, sometimes I hit top 8, but, you know, mostly in that 9-16 player, because the competition was so tough. So one day, Brian David Marshall, who ran the events, he said to me, he's like, you know, Elaine, you'd make a lot more money if you helped me run these things instead of playing in them. And I looked at him and I said, God damn you, Brian. Because he was totally right. So I started working for Grey Matter, which was a kind of a sister company to Neutral Ground that ran all those tournaments. And my husband did too. So I became a high-level judge. I was a level 3 judge. He helped organize. And so we would run all these events. December 98, the guy who certified me for my level 3, he got
a judge, level 3 if you're judging, just a...
Yeah, level 3 judging.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me to pull things out. My level 3 judge, Jeff Donay, he got his job at Wizards in the organized play team. And I contacted him, like, hey, congratulations. And what's happening with this other guy's job, who is Jason Carl, who previously had been the manager of, like, the DCI. And he had moved into a job in D&D R&D. And so his job was open, too. I'm like, what are you doing with Jason's job? And he's like, send me a resume. And I was like, okay. So I was substitute teaching at the time. I have a degree in elementary education. And I was just a couple years out of college. So I was still doing my substitute rotation. And so this job came up and we drove across the country with everything we owned in a U-Haul in the back of a car in January and got stuck in snow twice and came out. And that was 21 years ago.
Okay. So the first job you had was working for the DCI.
Yes. Yep. So I was the DCI tournament manager. So I did things like the floor rules. So, like, I wrote, like, the definition of shuffling, like what that meant, like, you know, all those different things. And then the most fun part of that job, though, was I also investigated cheaters and like people who did fraud for tournaments. In fact, Mark, if you remember, I worked very closely with your wife, Laura, who also happened to be there at the time. And she would feed me, like, these sketchy tournaments. Like, she'd be like, hey, Lane, I don't think this one looks right. And she'd, like, you know, feed over this tournament, and, like, I give him a call, and yeah.
Okay, so you worked in events in the DCI.
Yep.
Okay, but then you moved to another department. What department did you move to?
I moved to R&D. And, in fact, I sat right kind of next to you, like, diagonal across in the pit, like, right across the same table from you.
Yeah, you might be the only person that worked with both Laura and me at the company.
Is that true?
I mean, that worked with both. I mean, we both were at the company, but we were in different sections. Yeah. So,
am I the only one who actually worked directly with both of you?
Charlie Catino might be the other person because he ran events for a little while.
Charlie probably did too, but I literally sat like next to both of you.
Yes, yes, you did. not a lot of people can say that. So in R&D, what did you do in R&D?
Okay, so I did a whole lot of stuff in R&D. So I did Magic development. I was a Magic developer, so I developed sets from Odyssey through 8th edition, I want to say. So, like, I did Kamigawa, and I did Mirrodin, and Legions, and, like, a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm just rattling off some random set names. I was the R&D rep on Magic Online, like, for the first, like, launch, like, way, way back when. I worked on, like, the Xbox Battlegrounds game. Like, I was the R&D rep on that. I was on the rules committee, so I actually helped design phasing. That was one of my claims to fame. Not phasing.
Morph.
God damn it. Morph. Sorry. Rules committee. We designed Morph.
Yes.
So that
was. I remember.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest mechanic I had. We designed Morph because we were revising the rules to Illusionary Mask
and Camouflage.
That's what happened.
Right. And Camouflage.
Yeah, and camouflage. And we're like, okay, we're revising this. And we're like, hey, you know, you can make a whole mechanic out of this. So we did morph. And I was on the beginner games council, because I was also, lead on a whole bunch of licensed trading card games. So, I did a whole bunch of Magic work, but I also did, maybe more work, outside of Magic, doing things like I was the lead developer for the Harry Potter trading card game and the Neopets trading card game. And there's a European football game, and there's a whole bunch of, like Cartoon Network kids shows that we did. So there was just the Simpsons, right? Like there was just this huge number of licensed trading card games at the time. And I led or participated in most of them.
Okay. I can think of one team that we were both on together.
We were both on the Neopets team.
Oh, we were right. We were on the Neopets design team. We made this awesome, awesome game, and then they just threw it away and made something else.
We never used it. It was this amazing game, and it had all these little puzzles in it and everything. It was so super cool. And then we completely threw it away and went with like a more traditional TCG battle game, which was still fun and good, but it was we had a completely other game.
So what magic team were you and I together?
Were we on Simpsons also?
All I did for The Simpsons was I ordered the names of the creature types to be the funniest they could be. That's what I did for Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's fair.
That is all I did on The Simpsons. I just ordered. It's funnier if it's Bratz before whatever, you know. So.
What other team? Was there another game that we were on?
No, I mean, I'm talking about Magic. What Magic team were we on together?
What Magic team were we on together?
I remember one team we were on together.
It wasn't Kamigawa.
It was Champions of Kamigawa Development. So
It was like round four of Kamigawa Development, wasn't it?
I wasn't on the design team of any of the Kamigawa sets, but I was on the development team for Champions of Kamigawa, and in that I made Splice. Richard and I made Splice and the cards that the flip cards.
That was the one when you weren't on design, because that was weird. Because that was one of the only sets that I was actually in on design for, and you weren't in on design.
The whole block I didn't do design.
Yeah. So the thing about Kamigawa is, if you remember, I'm sure you do. We redesigned it like, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, like completely like redesigned the whole set. Like we kept designing it and being like, this isn't working. And we throw it away and like start over again. And then we design it again and then like throw that away and start over again.
Do you remember? I had a thing that I kept saying. Do you remember the thing I kept saying during the whole, I had like a thing that mattered to me and during the whole development, which is, what is this set about? Is it about a war? What is it about? And then, like, at some point, we like, it's about legends. Okay, well, it's about legends, and we'll do this, you know, so.
Yep. I remember two specific things about Kamigawa development. One is we commandeered a meeting room, and we put, like, the names of every legend on index cards, and we, like, taped them all up to the wall in, like, how they were related to each other. Like, who was related to each other and who wasn't. That was a big wall, and stuff kept moving. And at the end, I don't think it actually even mattered very much. But then the other thing is the thing I'm probably most proud of working on in Magic from a card standpoint was the whole development team. So you were there and I was there. So we locked ourselves in the Danger Room, which was a meeting room right offside the pit, which actually used to be Richard Garfield's old office. But we locked ourselves in the room because we're like, the set is like, it really needs like some oomph. And we just, the development team designed the dragon cycle. Like we just locked ourselves in a room for a day.
I remember
designed
that.
All the dragons. Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted you to attack with them.
Yeah.
I think the original design was like, you could tap to do some effect. And I'm like, you could attack with this giant thing or tap it and do something. I'm like, why? What's that? So I remember that. But here's a real quick story. You mentioned the Danger Room just for a fun behind the scenes. The history of the Danger Room is they gave Richard Garfield an office. But he didn't want an office. He wanted to sit in the pit. He didn't want an office. And so, but they said that he deserved an office. So he turned it into this meeting room that wasn't on the grid, so no one could schedule it. So we tended to use it because it would never, like, you always knew you could use it. And a lot of playtesting went on there and stuff, so.
Yeah, it was, and it was right next to where we were all sitting, so it was super convenient. It was small, though. It only fit, like, 4 people. It was tiny.
And now, every time we've moved, we've had a new danger room. The current danger room is one of those tiny little glass rooms. And the third floor. Anyway,
is it really?
Yeah, the danger room is fallen, like, and it's time.
Like, yeah,
it fits two people. It's a little tiny glass thing. Fits two people. The danger room is fallen. Yep. It's not what it once was. Okay.
I can take all the time with random stories. I was actually in the danger room when we had that really big earthquake. Remember that really?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so there, we had a really, it was like a 7-point-something earthquake that hit. I remember when it was, 2000 maybe, 2001.
Yeah, but it's in the old building.
What?
In the old building.
Yeah, in the old building.
Yeah.
And I was in the danger room for some meeting. Maybe it was a Comic-Con meeting, I don't remember. And I just remember, like, hearing this, like, thump, 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 and it would, like, get faster and louder. And the first thought that came into my head was that Scath must be running down the hallway. And I'm like, why is Scath running down the hallway? And then I realized, no, that's bigger than Scath. And it was the earthquake, right? And so, like, you know, we're looking out the little door. You know, I braced myself in the doorway like I'd been taught on the East Coast for, you know, earthquakes that I had never been in. And I didn't realize until afterwards that actually that wasn't a real doorway. It was just one of those, like, fake, you know, meeting room prop-up doorways. So yeah. That was actually not very safe at all.
And by the way, if you want to hear more from Scath, I did an interview with Scath. You guys can listen to Scath Elias, one of the original playtesters, started the Pro Tour and did all sorts of stuff. Okay, so you were at R&D for a while. But wait, you moved on from R&D. Where did you go next?
A long, long time ago. So because I did all that work on those licensed trading card games, I had already had built up a whole lot of relationships with all of the business folks on the licensor sides, right? So, like, I was the person who was maintaining most of the relationships, like, with the folks at, like, WB for Harry Potter and, like, at the Neopets office and, like, at, you know, at the Simpsons office. An opportunity came up for me to go over into the brand team as an associate brand manager for the licensed trading card games. And it was, I'll admit, it was super scary. And it was a really hard choice because I was a lead developer on all these products. And so I took this lead job in R&D to kind of take a step, like, sideways and backwards into, like, an associate brand manager position. And for those of you who aren't really in the corporate world, just so you know, like kind of the levels of, like, brand management and other roles, like, you start, like, assistant is the low level, you go to, like, assistant and then associate, and then you're, like, a normal brand manager, right? And then you're a senior brand manager. So it was a low level brand job.
And not Magic originally.
Coming from a lead in R&D. It was the best career move I ever made. Cause I mean, R&D was the best job for the time in my career and the time in my life that I've ever had, right? Like, you're playing games all day and you're making Magic, which I loved and has become such an important part of my life. And it was amazing. But I really wanted to get a bigger scope of the business. And
you can't just stay in R&D for years on end. Who would do that?
What, like you? You could do that, but I didn't do that. That's not for me. I moved around. So I moved into brand. I moved very quickly up that ladder, though, by the way. So I went from associate to brand manager within, like, a year, and then to senior brand manager, within another, like, 6 months or something. But I started running brand for all the licensed games. As I said, very quickly moved into, taking over the Magic brand. I did Magic brand for well over a decade, all the way up through. I was vice president of global brand strategy and marketing for a little while.
So what kind of stuff does a brand manager do? So the audience who might not know what that means.
Yeah. So the brand folks were generally responsible for, I'll just put in quotes, like, the business of Magic, right? So it was everything from planning out, like, you know, kind of, you know, long-term strategic planning to, you know, what actual SKUs are we selling? SKUs is the term for, like, the actual individual products. Like, what's the configuration of the products? And I don't mean, like, not cards, like, that's R&D's job. But this, at the time, it was really things like one of the first innovations I brought into the brand team was dual decks, by the way, because before dual decks, Wizard had kind of stopped doing anything that wasn't a normal booster pack or, like, a starter deck, right? Like, there was a couple things we had tried before, like the Anthologies collection and, like, a couple little things like that, but we had kind of gotten off of that. One of the things I wanted to do was try to figure out, like, what are other ways we could package together Magic cards in ways that are fun and exciting and, like, let people play out of the box and, you know, let them really enjoy things. So, like, the Elves versus Goblins dual decks, like, that idea, like, that was one of the things that I brought in, that. And then, shortly after that, it was, like, the, now I'm losing the name of it, the 15 card, edition with the dragons.
From the vault?
From the vault. and like from the vault, right? So like I didn't design the decks or like what went into it, but the idea of like, how do we configure these products? Like that was one of the main things that the brand team did. And so it was, what's the configuration of these products, and then how much do they cost, and like how many do we print? And then how do we market them, right? Like how do we tell people about them? Like what's the preview campaign, and like how do we bring it to market? So those were, that's the main job of the brand manager.
So by the way, very recently I interviewed Rachel Agnes, who is the current Magic brand manager.
Yes.
And so anyway, if you want, I mean, they worked the job at different times, but you get sort of sense of different people
and
that.
Rachel's awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So, but being brand manager at Magic wasn't enough. You had to go on and do yet a different job. So what was your next job?
I did. Okay. So in fall 2018, the beta of Magic the Gathering Arena came out. And it did way better than we thought it was going to, quicker than we thought it was going to. Like we had been working, you have to understand, we had been working on this next version of digital Magic for like a really long time.
It was
a long, long time. And we had finally broken through. Like a big reason why we broke through was we got in kind of the right people to do the job really well. And so we brought it into beta. And we had always known that, you know, competitive play was going to be a really big part of what Arena had to offer, because competitive play had been part of the kind of heart of Magic, you know, since way, way, way back, right? Way back since, you know, the first Pro Tour was in 96 and even before then. So we always knew that was going to be that going into esports and, you know, taking Magic competitive play, making the leap into bringing that into the digital space, was something we always intended for MTG Arena. And we expected to do it, like, you know, when the game was out in full, you know, and, you know, set up a really nice transition and pull it in. But the beta did way better than we expected, way quicker than we expected. And we decided that we should capitalize on the momentum that we were getting, and we should really push forward quicker than our original plans were. And so in October 2018, I formed the esports team, which the core of the esports team was really the previous organized play team. Like, you know, we brought forward, you know, everybody who had spent, you know, so many years becoming experts in Magic competitive play and really industry leading in terms of, you know, competitive gaming. And set out to, you know, hire a bunch of people in from the digital gaming space, and really create a robust esports program. So we started the team in October 2018 with the charter of, okay, you're going to announce the program at the Game Awards in December, on December 6th. And then the first big event is going to be at PAX East in Boston on March 28th. That was the timeline.
Right. And so the audience understands, like the original plan was like, we'd have a year or so to flesh things out and figure it out. Yes. And then it's like, oh, did we say a year and a half? We meant couple months.
We meant 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. We meant 6 months. So do it now. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. So I had to do it with, I had to hire 10 people, right? Like, so like I said, like we had the, you know, that team. But then I had like 10 headcount to open to bring people in. It was pretty crazy. I didn't sleep very much. The team worked so hard, really. They work hard, and they did such an amazing job. And so I ran the esports program since, you know, from October 2018 until just recently. And I have to say, I am so proud of that team for pulling together so quickly and on such short notice. Like really, we were just running and like kind of building the floor as we were running it. And I mean, the consumers could tell, right? They're like, we don't have all the answers we want. And it's like, no, we don't have the answers that you want. We'll get them to you before the events actually happen, or before you need them. But it's not on the timeline they were used to. Because the players are really used to, you know, knowing like a full year in advance, like what the full schedule is and like how everything's going to work. And we just didn't have that luxury of time. So the team did a really amazing job and really led up to that last Worlds that we just had earlier this year in Hawaii, which I think hands down was, I really think it was the best Magic competitive event that we've ever run. Like it was just spectacular. The quality of the competition, the quality of the broadcast, the ability for people to watch and cheer, the fact that we had a live audience for it, It was a really spectacular and special show.
Okay, so
Paolo told me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Paolo told you. Sorry.
I was gonna say Paolo told me afterwards. He was like, you know, Elaine, I've been playing this game a long time. I've never felt like, you know, like a superstar, like as much as I did for the entire like lead up and, you know, conclusion of this tournament. Like it's just, it was a different level and a different kind of elevation. And it was really great. And then of course, very shortly thereafter, COVID hit. And so I spent, you know, March through June, just, you know, shutting events down around the world. And that was really super painful. It was really sad.
So before we move on, do you have any fun stories from your time of running esports?
Oh, I have a lot of fun stories. I will say that Paolo, actually, he owes me a shave ice. One of the early nights in the weekend, I went out for some shave ice at the end of the night. And I get in line at, you know, the shave ice place, and in front of me, there just happens to be like a bunch of Magic players were there. So like Andre was there, and Paolo was there, and I think it was Matt Nass was there. And I was like, oh hey, I'll pay for your guys' shave ice. It's fine. I'll put it on the Wizards card. And Paolo was like, what? I just paid for mine. And I'm like, you just oh, okay. He's like, well, that's okay, Elaine, though, right? He's like, if I win this thing, like, I'll owe you a shave ice. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he won. He finished. I'm like, hey, Paolo, you owe me a shave ice. He's like, that I do. So at some point, I'm going to need to contrive for Paolo and I to get some competition in Hawaii so that he can pay me back.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not too far from work here. So we're not done yet with your jobs. You have,
no.
See, I started 25 years ago and like, what have I done? Yeah, that one thing, that's what I've done. You keep changing it up. You keep, okay, so esports was not enough. So you move on. So what are you doing now?
Yeah, so I just started a brand new thing. It's way too early to really talk much about it. But I am the new head of studio for a new Wizards studio. So what that means is, I mean, right now the studio is one. It's me. Actually, it's one and a half because I got one of our wonderful art directors who works on D&D, Emmy Tanji. She came in for she's doing a swap opportunity with me, so for like half time as an art director to help me get started. So I've got one and a half people in the studio right now, we're setting out to make some kids games for, you know, kids 6 to 12, which is exciting because that goes to my roots a little bit back to, you know, when I was R&D and when I was running all of those licensed, mostly kids games, you know, my elementary education degree and things like that. So it feels really nice. Kind of like how when I took over esports, it made me feel like I was kind of coming home to my roots in organized play. Starting up the kids studio is making me kind of come back to my next set of roots, which is doing kids games.
I know. So it all comes full circle to,
it really does.
So to wrap up here, so you have worked in events, you've worked in R&D, you've worked on brand, you've worked on esports. Now you're working on a brand new thing with kids games. When was your 20 year? You just hit your 20 year last year.
I'm at 21 and a half now.
21 and a half. Okay. Youngin.
Youngin.
So what is your, I just sort of a final takeaway from all your time at Wizards and working on Magic, what is your thoughts to wrap up?
So my thoughts are that to me, Wizards is a really special place. It is a place that is filled with people who are the most passionate and intelligent and good-natured people who really are motivated only by making the best possible experiences for our players, whether it's Magic or D&D or Duel Masters or any of the other things that we've worked on. Just the fact that I'm surrounded by everyone virtually now, but mostly in person for the last 21 years, who really care about making awesome experiences and game experiences that much is inspiring. And it's why I've been here for so long. And I don't really see myself, I'm not looking to go anywhere. anywhere else. It's also special because, like I said, my husband worked at Wizards for 16 years before he became a stay-at-home dad. My daughter went through the daycare, just like your kids did. And so, like, we spent, you know, the first 5 years of her life, you know, driving together as a family, you know, into the office space, right, dropping off the daycare, you know, coming back together. And so really, you know, having this full family experience, it's you know, magic at Wizards has just been so much a part of my life.
Well, it's been great working with you all this time. I mean, not that we're stopping or anything, but it's been great working with you all this time. And it's kind of fun. One of the things that's been a real joy for me doing these interviews is I get to just reminisce with people that, you know, from you know, all through the history of working at Wizards. So,
yeah. And in one of your podcasts, do you ever talk about, do you talk about the Mad Farmer in any of your podcasts?
I have. I know who the Mad Farmer is, by the way. And it's not one person, it's multiple people.
Really?
Yes. So for those who don't know, I have talked about this in my podcast, but real quickly, for those who don't know, there was a series of things in R&D where people would do crazy things. One, Henry's desk got dressed up with hay bales. Mine got dressed up with all these eggs. There was one with all these goldfish, like bowls of goldfish. And for years, we've dubbed him the Mad Farmer because it was all farm-related things. And I recently learned... Brian Schneider, I did an interview with Brian Schneider. He owned up to doing one of them. I talked with Mike Donay. He owned up to doing one of them. And we think Selinker did the third one. So it was three different people.
I always expected Selinker, but yeah, okay. All right.
So anyway, by the way, whoever's been following me, I've talked with Mad Farmer in my articles, on podcasts. So anyway, there's been this evolution, but the funniest thing was I had Brian Schneider on. He admitted to doing one of them on the podcast. So anyway,
that's amazing.
Yes.
Schneider, man.
But anyway, all the fun. See, guys, you should listen to my interviews. All sorts of fun things that can happen. So anyway, I am now at work. So we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So thank you, Elaine, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it. It was super fun to reminisce.
And everybody else, I will see you next time. Bye-bye.